D2, number 20A.
I was presenting to you this last hour the development of the philosophical idea, and afterwards Sir Roy came up to me and said, well, but what is the contribution within that whole development of the engineer? Because it's the engineer like himself who is going to save a country when there is danger. It's the engineer that is the practical one who does it. And where does that come into the chart? Well, I think it comes in there, exactly where we had in Christianity, in absolute Christian science, life and love. The one who brings forth a new idea is always the Father. And usually it is so that the inventors and those who have a new idea, they never bring it to the point of love, to the motherhood. They never make it practical. They never hug it and make it work. The mother does that. Therefore, you can see that most inventors have just that fatherhood sense, and they cannot see that invention through to the point of having it applied and be made practical in its fullest sense. Is that the answer, Sir Roy? You see, that the engineer, the technician, he takes the idea and makes it practical. And this, I think, is that which we have to see within ourselves always, that a new idea can come to us. And it's wonderful, it's enlightening, but that's only the fatherhood sense. The motherhood sense comes and says, now I hug it, I protect it, and I see what it is going to do for the world. Now, we came to that point in the development of the idea, where the idea was seen as a structure with great simplicity. And though it has great simplicity, it brings order into the whole universe. I said that only recently metaphysics has grown into a new sense of metaphysics. That classical evolution has come to a point where it has been seen that it is no more that it doesn't fulfill its latest necessities, that something quite new had to come. And this is the metaphysics of cybernetics, which we can call a trans-classical metaphysics. It isn't one step further. It's a complete break with everything that has gone on since the classical Greek era. Therefore, we must not see what I'm presenting now as a further step, but as a complete break that has taken place and a complete new start which is made. What is the classical logic? I talk now about the classical logic and then about the cybernetic new logic. All through these ages, see, we have seen that there was one common denominator about idea and relation to matter, that it was constantly a question of how ideas relate to matter, how ideas relate to external existence, to eternal experience. It was that great, with the Greek classic, that great struggle was introduced between idealism and materialism, which today really takes that form of the capitalist countries and the communist countries, the capitalist countries being more on the side of idealism, the communist country more on the side of dialectical materialism. And there is a constant discussion between them, who is right and who is wrong. And since 2,500 years, we have not found an answer. The hippies seems to touch the answer. The hippies and the cybernetists, they are on the same level. They seem to find the new answer by letting the old thing just drop and finding a third. So, what is the classical logic in which we have been brought up. And we are just stamped by that classical logic and thought that's the end and the highest of everything. Nothing goes above classical logic. Oh, it does. It does. And cybernetics has realized that. Not invented that, but realized that. How? All right. Let me just quickly state what is classical logic. And you see it all over the place in the Christian Science textbook. Classical logic was seeing that there is an absolute being which we can call God. That absolute being is an identity where subject and object are one. It's the absolute God which has only what I will call one value, namely itself. Only one value, itself. But they began to see, because we are not God himself, but because we are outside of God and are human, and are humanly thinking, there the human thinks in two values, not in one value. So that absolute oneness seems to come to human reasoning always as a two-value logic. A logic which right from the start has always thought in two values, namely in subject and object, in good and evil, in life and death, in true and wrong. I could make a whole list of that two value, where those two values were always opposites of each other. And that's dualism. So classical logic, in which we have been brought up, is that consciousness of dualism, of having one and its opposite, of having a thinking subject and face to face to it, the object on which we think. It is always spirit and matter, good and evil, life and death, God and nature, and so on, you see. And reasoning was therefore dependent on making a sharp line of demarcation between the one and the two. There was no point where they would mix. Well, right was right, left was left. You can't mix right and left. There's just one point which is a line of demarcation where just a slight deviation is either right or left. And so classical reasoning was always a two-value logic. Can I say so? A two-value logic. The value right and left, positive and negative, true and wrong, material, spiritual. And even when Hegel, as we saw, tried to solve that by putting them together and say, they are not two, there is not a thesis and an antithesis, I can take them together into a synthesis. He began to realize afterwards, or we began to realize afterwards, that this new synthesis is only stating again a new thesis against which there is a higher antithesis. And so it had again to be over, lifted up into a higher synthesis, and that went on and on. So the dualism was not solved. It was just pushed further to another field. That's all what happened. So Hegel didn't solve the antithesis, which he thought he could solve through his synthesis. This is classical reasoning. Now came cybernetics. And cybernetics were finding out that cybernetic instrument or machines can perform functions which up to now we thought only men could perform, or animals could perform, which could only be performed by a thinking or intuitive living organism. A machine is matter, an object. And suddenly man found out that a machine could actually do that which we thought only a thinking subject could do. We took during this week the governor, a purely mechanical thing, and yet that mechanical thing had information built within it so that the man is no more necessary to control when the pressure goes up and when the pressure goes low and has to act, that it acted by itself as if it would know what it had to do. So one began to realize that suddenly that which has been attributed to a thinking subject could also be performed by a material object. Therefore, that there is a realm apparently in human experience that is neither purely subjective nor purely objective. The man at that government is out of job, he's gone, the machine still goes on, but he does perform the function of the thinking man. So it's only matter. Now, we know that now these cybernetics models, like computers, can learn, that they can teach, that they can perform the function of the human brain. They may not have consciousness, we don't know yet, they may not have consciousness, but what we know is that they can perform the functions of a consciousness. They can calculate much quicker than we can. They can calculate much more secure than we can. And yet it is just a material machine, holy matter. And yet it can perform something which we thought only a subjective thought can do. So more and more one finds out, you see, this thing is so new, only a few years old, one finds out that there is a third value, which does neither belong to the subjective thinker, nor does it belong to the objective machine, that there must be a third value, a third force. You see, never have we thought about that. No philosopher since Plato have thought out that. Suddenly that comes up in this age, that the two-value logic way of thinking, and that actually there must exist a third value, and that third value seems to be a very important one, because apparently that can work much quicker subjectively than we as a subject could work in many ways. Not yet in always, but who knows what happens in 50 or 100 or 200 years? We don't know. The line is given, the direction is given, it goes that way. Naturally, when a new idea is ripe to break out, it comes all over the place. It really has come perhaps already way back in mathematics in the last century, when mathematicians have begun to find out the law of probability. The statistical mathematics, which is not relying on natural laws, on laws of probabilities, so it is not a mathematics which belongs to nature, nor is it a mathematics which belongs only to the subjective thinker, because it takes the experiences, the phenomena, and takes them and puts them into statistical mathematics. And they already began to see that statistical mathematics is really a third function between purely metaphysical mathematics and purely mathematics which calculates natural laws. It came up suddenly with Einstein, who began to show that everything is relative, that there is no definite break between object and subject, that something is either so or so, that we can say either the sun is still and the earth moves around the sun, or you can with the same authority say the earth is the center of the universe and the whole universe turns around the earth. There is no more an absolute fixedness between what is a subjective standpoint. And so he could see that the subjective standpoint could constantly be altered into a new objective standpoint, so that object and subject are no more properly divisible, and there is no clear cut. Then came along Planck. By investigating matter, they began to realize what really Einstein has foreseen, that light is not only energy, a wave of energy, that if I handle light from another standpoint, it is a material quantum, matter. So it can either be energy or matter. And both are right. Up to this point, the classical logic said, either something is so, and therefore it can't be something else. See, that's classical logic. Either something is what it is, and then it cannot lose its identity and be at the same time something else. This is no more true. It's no more true. Planck, with his quantum theory, began to show that and showed that something can either be this or that. Can you see how the whole logical structure of our consciousness began to crumble right away? Or, like Heisenberg then has showed, that through observation of the tiny little particles, the way we observe something, that's a subjective approach, that in the way the subjective approach is, the object will be something else, we'll find something different. That the object is dependent on how I look at it subjectively. So that there is no clear-cut separation anymore between subject and object. See, that whole classical reasoning just falls to pieces nowadays. If we realize it or not, if we still go on in the classical reasoning or not, that doesn't matter. But actually, one begins to work on the fact that object and subject are no more two opposites. There is no dualism. So, at this point where from various sides came the indication that there is a third factor, really, cybernetics used that third factor. What is that third factor? As I have been showing, that every cybernetic model, like a computer, works, or a regulator, or a thermostat, works on the basis that there is a third factor, that it is neither subject nor object, but it works on the ground of what they call the third factor, namely information. That in under information, they consider as a reflex process, as a process, as an information and the communication of information which is self-organizing, which is self-instructing, which is self-feeding back. And we have the feeding back of information. The thermostat constantly talks, see, has a language of its own, which is not German, which is not English, which cannot be heard, and yet there is constant information going on. It says, oh, it's too hot, put out the machine. Oh, it's too cold, get on again with the heating, and so on. See, constantly talking. Who is that talking? Not the thermostat itself, nor the man who isn't at home. And yet it does. That's the third. There, they begin to see that the third is an it, we may call it, that it is a self-consciousness, not a human self-consciousness, but a consciousness which exists by itself, which is neither subjective nor objective. They call it a reflex process, independent of things and thinking, a higher thinking, a reflex, a self-governing, self-organizing, self-knowing, self-informing reflex. And so, cybernetics has found out, oh, there is a consciousness which does not belong either only to the human or to the machine, which is something much higher. So those two find also a higher level, but not as a synthesis. Cybernetics says, I'm no more interested in the question of dualism, idea and matter, subject and object. This question is not solved. There is still a subjective thinking. There are still machines which are objective. But it's irrelevant to me. It's irrelevant to me. That's what cybernetics says. Says to the whole logic of classical thinking, says, this is irrelevant. All that matters is information. The third, that which neither belongs to the human thought, nor to the objects, nor to matter. Therefore, cybernetics finds, if we can call so, that reconciling factor between those still unreconciled opposites of the two-way logic. It's a reconciliation without reconciling it. Matter and spirit are not reconciled, and yet cybernetics finds the reconciliator, because it says, this is a false question. I'm not interested in it, in that dualism of subject and object. So, information, that third, becomes really a reflex level, a level which is above subjective thinking and objects. Information is called the infinitely regulating principle, which neither belongs to the object nor to the subject. Isn't that, we feel it in our bones. You see, we feel it in our bones what information means in divine cybernetics, that it is the divine mind, the understanding of mind. Can you feel that? That all that querying which we have in the human reasoning about duality, oh, this is error, oh, this is truth, well, this is spiritual, that's fine, oh, this is just material error, that this question, which goes right through the textbook, it becomes irrelevant. It says, I'm not interested in that question. It's no question at all. It's not the right question. And therefore, the textbook lifts it up to mind, and to mind's understanding of itself. So what are the consequences of this cybernetic idea? And afterwards, we can be the engineer and the technicians who make use of that new understanding. First, we have to see its theory or its in its principle. The consequences, therefore, is, if I may summarize it like that, that the classical logic of two values is completely inadequate to explain reality. It's inadequate. And there is no reason why we should go on reasoning it out and arguing it out. It's just inadequate. It's too narrow. Cybernetics says, I give you as the answer just a third. I do not solve your argumentation and dialectic materialism and dialectic idealism. I am not going to argue to and fro. I lift it up to the third factor, namely information process. So the dualistic logic becomes irrelevant, and therefore, can we see that when this idea breaks through, that its first great practical experience will be that if that breaks through in the West and in the East, in the communistic country and in the materialistic country, that that old quarrel becomes irrelevant, because it has no more true foundation. You know, it's quite interesting. I didn't know that. Only a few years ago, really, the communists have renounced that their decision that Einstein is just, what you call them, a funny man, has been renounced. I think up to 58 or even later, the theory of Einstein, the theory of relativity, had been pronounced by communism to be just crazy. See, Though the scientists in Russia had to work on that theory to make their atom bombs. See? Well, the pressure came from the technician, from the physical scientist against the theory of communism and said, you can't go on dialectic materialism if we build the atom bomb on the theory that there is no dialectic materialism. And only little by little they have to give way and say, and give in, just like the Catholic Church, only after 50 or 100 or 200 years they have to give in and say, all right, what you natural scientists find out is right. The same thing happens, you see. But the solution comes not by arguing from the point of view of Western idealism with communistic materialism, saying, you are wrong, I am right, and so on. It's overformed by seeing what cybernetics sees. It's an irrelevant question. The third is information. So the whole thing about this dualism is antiquated. It's passé, completely passé. And we better think about that, that this is passé. That we are not going to find our solution by thinking, how can I control matter through idea, what is the idea about this material thing and that material thing? These were all streams of thought which were coming on through the centuries and through the idea sweeping the other centuries to the point where we see this is an irrelevant question. Go out from mind itself. And mind itself is one value logic. You see, it's no more two value logic. Mind, capital M, is no more two value logic. Because mind itself does not know any dualism. Therefore is not interested in this question of how to solve dualism. Therefore, cybernetics really asks, as I say, for a new language, just like Heisenberg. He says the old language, the old logic, is no more adequate. There must be a new language, and they fall back on Hegel, who had begun to see, really, that everything is a total reflex of being. Hegel called that third value of information, he called it the world mind, or the absolute reason. Perhaps we could call it, like St. John did, the logos. And begin to see that the whole of being is just one reflex, total reflex. And that we can no more properly speak about thinking. Just like Heidegger said, we are thought of. We are being thought by the big thinker, which is God, being. We are no more the thinker. We are the passive form of it, to be thought about by the divine mind, by being.